Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, welcome to mini episode number 56 of the FDH Lounge. Once again on the Sportsology channel, which we've been privileged to be able to use when we're speaking with anyone remotely. This is FDH Lounge managing partner Rick Morris. Got a very special friend on with us here tonight. One of our dignitaries in the lounge who we enjoy talking football with. I want to start at the outset by wishing everyone a happy Hanukkah, not least of which, again, our good friend Russ Cohen from Sportsology. And we have a very excellent mini episode here for you tonight. It's an NFL playoff preview, and we're going to start by focusing on the team that this gentleman knows the best, that being the New York Jets. We'll kind of branch off from there and look at some other teams in the playoff picture as well. One of our favorite guys to talk football with on this show has become an NFL correspondent on the show for us. Of course, it's our good friend, Ira Lieberfarb, known in New York radio circles as Ira from Staten Island. But on this show, Ira Lieberfarb, NFL correspondent for us here. It's a pleasure to have him in. Ira, welcome back to the lounge, my friend. How are you tonight?
All right, pretty good, Rick. How are you? And happy holidays to you and all the listeners out there.
Fine, thanks. Yeah, it's a great time of year, my friend. And again, it's going to be a very festive and very active Christmas Eve in the New York area here this week. I know you'll be at the Jets game, as you always are. I guess we can start with that. Jets, Giants. The war of words. I mean, for anybody betting on who is going to start the war of words, I guess you could either bet Rex Ryan or the field. And unsurprisingly, it starts with Rex Ryan. Jets are better than the Giants. I think after the Giants' fold-up performance this past Sunday, that's something that a lot of folks wouldn't even dispute right now. But what do you see as being the percentage in saying such a thing, and how does that play into what's going to be looks like a loser is done death match on Sunday here? Both teams desperately needing a win in the playoff picture. So how do you see the comments focusing or having an impact on the game, and how do you see the game itself?
Honestly, you know, I wouldn't expect anything less from Rex. I kind of surprised that he went that far, considering we just lost by about 40 points to the Eagles on Sunday. But putting that all into perspective, you know, Rick, right now I'm caught in the middle. I mean, you know, as optimistic as I like to be about the Jets, and I go back to training camp, I just couldn't put my finger on it, but you just felt like just something wasn't right. And, you know, we're going into, you know, the 15th game of the year now, and they still haven't shown their identity. You know, they want to be a running game team. They want to throw the ball, and the defense has taken a step backwards. Now you got a Giant team coming off that's coming off a horrible loss against Washington. So, you know, both teams are desperate. I know the Jets aren't dead. If they lose, you know, they could still get in with some tiebreakers. The Giants absolutely can't get in if they lose. So right now, I tell you the truth, I think you could just flip a coin, because coming off two bad performances like that, I just think whichever team comes out and has the better day is going to win the game.
Ira, I'd like to focus in on what you said there about something not being right. In a mini episode that we did last week with another one of our football specialists, Kyle Ross, he agreed wholeheartedly with my point about the Jets. But nobody knows more about the Jets than you, so I'd really like to run this by you. My point when we were talking about the Jets at that time, I said, there's one thing Mark Sanchez has in common with Aaron Rodgers, and as far as I'm concerned, and that's that he's the best player on his offense at the skill positions. Now, with Aaron Rodgers, he's better than, I'd say, even Greg Jennings and some other great players there, Jermichael Finley. To me, Mark Sanchez is the best skill position player on the Jets by default. I see the skill position players as being overrated. I'd still say it's an above-average group, but they've been billed as being more than that. To me, Santonio Holmes is only a number one because he gets paid like that. He's not consistent enough in my book. And on down the line, Sean Green, I think, is an above-average NFL running back, but not the consistent number one thus far that you'd like to have. To me, it's Sanchez the best player by default there, and that he gets a lot of skill slings and arrows, but to me the slings and arrows come from those who think he has more to work with than what he does. Do you agree or disagree with my theory?
You know, you took the words right out of my mouth. I mean, I guess you're seeing in the New York area, everybody gets overrated right from the beginning. Holmes, I love Holmes. You know, I think he's an excellent receiver. But like you said, there's just a lot of inconsistencies about his game where, you know, he'll make a game-winning catch like last year. He had 3-4, you know, game-saving TDs at the end of the game. But then all of a sudden, in the second and third quarter, look how he opened the game against the Eagles. He's going to go through lapses like that. You know, no disrespect to him, but, you know, he's not a Larry Fitzgerald. He's not a Jenny. And unfortunately, the New York media hypes him up. Plaxico Burress, he's great in the red zone, but he definitely struggles to get separation from the line of scrimmage. Keller should have been a 75-catch guy this year. And just some games, he just disappears, whether it's the philosophy of the offense, whether it's Sanchez, whether it's a play calling, probably a combination of a lot of things. But, you know, quite honestly, I do think they are overrated.
Yeah. So you and I are in agreement on that point there. Again, yeah, I'd classify them personally as being above average, but they get billed as being better than that. And that, to me, I think is one of the reasons people are impatient with Mark Sanchez. I know there are a fair number of other people. My friend Russ Cohen from Sportsology, my aforementioned friend on whose platform we are speaking tonight. I know that he has kind of railed about the play calling, he being a big Jets fan. What role do you see that in playing with the offense being up and down this year?
Well, you know, Schottenheimer has always taken a brunt since he's here. You know, the way I look at it, yeah, you know what? The players have to execute. Sometimes the plays don't look like they're the right plays because maybe somebody misses a block, somebody runs the wrong route, somebody drops a pass. I say Schottenheimer is an above-average coordinator, but he just takes way too much criticism here. And I once again, I'll go back to camp. You know, they had success the first 2 years. They ran the ball heavy, and, you know, Sanchez really thrived off play action. He had Edwards as a deep threat, and they gave that up this year. They decided to be more of a passing team, and I haven't looked at the numbers lately, but I'll go back about 2 weeks, 3 weeks. They transformed from maybe about a 60-40 run team. Now all of a sudden they're like a 58-42 passing team. And you know what? Just as much as I think Sanchez is a good quarterback, he's not going to carry you on his back for four quarters, and he needs a running game to really show that, you know, he could be successful. And, you know, when they went through the season that way and they started the year, I just think it threw everything out of whack.
Yeah, that is a very abrupt change in identity from 1 year to the next. And when you're looking at mostly the same personnel, although, as you said, formerly they'd had Edwards in there, but still, it's a big change in identity, and that can be kind of abrupt. I like to, as I said previously, use the Jets and your experiences watching them there as a jumping off point for some of your other observations about the league this year, and something that you were in position to see several weeks ago. One of the two or three biggest stories of the season, I'd say, has been Tebow mania. You were there at the new Mile High a couple of weeks back for that one, a disappointing loss for the Jets. But that right there seemed to be a pretty good example of the type of victory that the team has had this year, very reliant on the run game, getting to be much more one-dimensional in that sense than they were when Kyle Orton was in there, albeit it seems to have worked very well. But that's a game where, again, the defense gave up that late touchdown, and yet it seems as though Sanchez kind of took some abuse for them not winning the game. But what were your observations on watching that? I mean, that's an offense that I've kind of belittled as being like a rugby-type offense and something that to me doesn't look sustainable in the long run. But what were your thoughts on that and how the Jets ultimately at the end were as befuddled, it seems like, as most teams in trying to stop that offense?
Well, I think what happened in that game was, I mean, you watched it. They shut him down for 55 minutes. If Jim Leonard makes a tackle, he gets Eddie Royal for a safety, that game's over. You know, Leonard missed a tackle, and then you know what happened the last 5 minutes. Quite honestly, I think the Steelers will probably be the team that's going to go out to Denver to play a wild card game, if that's how it breaks out. I think you'll see the Steelers shut him down completely. And I think the league will catch up to him next year, if he's even a quarterback at Broncos next year. Elway will probably have a hard time not bringing him back, but I think he would like to make a change. I just can't believe that he'll continue with him. And I think Tebow's got a lot of heart, a lot of gut. You don't want to be playing against him in a fourth quarter with a 3-point, 7-point lead. But, you know, bottom line is, Jets called the wrong defensive play on that touchdown run. I mean, they overloaded and they blitzed from Tebow's right. They forced him, basically, to his strong side. And they were playing like a blitz package for passing. And he's not going to beat you throwing the ball. They should have just played him straight up. And when Eric Smith lost his containment, that was the game. To me, I think it was more of a bad defensive play call than Tebow making a 20-yard run.
I think you're right about that, Ira, and that's really been the case throughout the year, whether it be Marion Barber screwing up by running out of bounds in the Chicago game or whatever. It's really been this unbelievable run of luck and mistakes made by the other team, and maybe it's teams getting psyched out by dealing with the syndrome of a guy who looks unstoppable in the fourth quarter. But in many cases, I agree with you. They do seem to be handing it to them. You mentioned Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, of course, not a team that you've seen in person this year, but you did at the very end of last year in the AFC Championship game. So I know that your observations about them are still going to be pretty much in line with what they are today. They seem like about the same team, maybe a little bit better in the secondary than they were. I've criticized their secondary the last couple of years, but they seem to have tightened up a little bit there. But since my Cleveland Browns went out and did a number on Big Ben's ankle a couple weeks back, that's the only thing they've accomplished all year. But we saw Monday night the effects of a Ben Roethlisberger with diminished mobility. And, again, you talked about them looking like they might be in the five spot there. Look for them, I would say, probably to settle in and accept that in the next week or so, maybe try and get them a little bit of rest. But there are those who would say, Ira, that ankle and the mobility might be what separates Pittsburgh from another Super Bowl run versus not making it. How do you see Pittsburgh stacking up against the field?
Well, I think they'll go out there. I think they can handle Denver if it shakes out that way. But anything further than that, if Roethlisberger doesn't have his mobility, I think it's going to cost him against a big-time defense. You know, whether they play the Jets, whether they play the Ravens, whether they play the Texans, if he's forced to stay inside the pocket, and you could see last night clearly he was having difficulty throwing because he couldn't plant his foot. And if that foot, if that ankle's still the same, I don't see Steelers going very far.
Yeah, I think most people would probably agree with that. That was a very stark example what happened on Monday night there. And again, you could look at that and say, well, that's a very good San Francisco defense that he was going up against, but you're going to face a couple others like that in the playoff field, not least of which the team that looks the most likely to win that division, a team that you saw earlier in the season, Baltimore. Now, that was a game, again, like the Denver game, that was a tough day for the Jets. But notwithstanding that, it was it had to leave you very impressed by what Baltimore's got to offer right about now. It's a strange thing with them, Ira. Again, the Jets being a good team, Baltimore came out there with their A game, and I've kind of joked about this a little bit. They're lucky that they're only going to face good teams in the playoffs because that way they won't let down. Do you see letdowns as being just about the only thing that could separate this Ravens team from a Super Bowl, especially if Roethlisberger's not 100%?
Yeah, I would have to agree with you, or Flacco has a bad day, because, you know, their defense is just, I mean, once again, San Diego put a lot of points on them the other night. And like you said, letdowns. But right now, barring any upsets, I would say Baltimore would be going up to New England probably for the AFC Championship game.
That's actually my forecast as of right now. Although I want to talk about New England in a second here, because again you've seen them twice this year, and I know you've got some thoughts. You see them multiple times every year, three times last year because of the playoffs. But in a general sense, I mean, I look at New England, the Jets, Baltimore, Pittsburgh. I kind of leave Houston out of this for the moment, because it did finally start to look Sunday as though maybe these blows are getting to be a little bit too much for them. They lose Matt Schaub. They haven't had Mario Williams in there. Now Wade Phillips out for a period of time. I mean, Houston just looks like they've had too many accumulated blows. It's hard to take anybody in the West as seriously as those other four teams. I'm pretty excited looking ahead here at the grab bag between the Jets, Patriots, Steelers, and Ravens this year. Doesn't it have a little bit more of a vibe of really anything could happen between those four teams as far as the matchups and everything?
No, because I think it's going to come back to bite the Patriots, because the defense, I just don't think that – I think if somebody could hold the Patriots to 24 points or less, I think they could be beaten. The Jets, you know, hopefully they get into the playoffs. Hopefully they take care of Houston. They're going to go up to New England. You know, just as much as, you know, I bleed green, I they're just not the same team as last year. I think it would be very difficult to go up there and go point for point with New England, especially since they can't cover a tight end and you got Gronkowski. So the Steelers, all right, the Steelers beat the Patriots during the regular season. I think they could do it again. Once again, I think a lot depends. It depends on his ankle. If Roethlisberger is 100%, it's going to be a Pittsburgh-New England AFC Championship game. If he's not 100%, it'll be Baltimore. I think Baltimore will end up, if I had to take a guess now, I'd say I'm going to go on the edge here and say you're going to have a Baltimore-New Orleans Super Bowl.
Interesting. And I want to get to the NFC in a second here and see how you see the top teams in the AFC stacking up potentially. But yeah, Baltimore and New England, it's interesting, because I referenced previously the last football segment that we did on the show with another one of our football specialists, Kyle Ross. He's been picking Baltimore over New England pretty consistently in the AFC Championship game throughout the season. I've been saying New England over Baltimore, but that does have the earmarks of the classic offense versus defense type struggle there, because I said to believe in Baltimore, I think you got to think they're going to get at least 21 points. It's interesting that you said 24, but we're thinking in the same ballpark. Baltimore, no matter how much they shut them down, is still going to have to score to a certain extent. Yeah, New England is an interesting case there because, again, they really seem to have become such a finesse team. They can still run the ball pretty good with Green Ellis, but they really so much rely on outscoring you with the pass. And like you said, Gronkowski has become one of the most uncoverable weapons in the league here. From what you've seen of New England five times now over the course of the last two seasons, assess where you think they're at, please. It seems like the offense is getting better and better, but the defense, it seems certainly worse than it was last year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I just think that the defense just doesn't have the personnel. But, you know, it's very deceiving with the Patriots. You look at the numbers, and they're right at the bottom five of the league defensively. But, you know, they give up most of their yardage in between the 20s. When you get into the red zone of the Patriots, they come up big. And you look at points allowed, they're up there pretty good with the top 5-10 defenses in the league. So I'm going to say they give up approximately 20, 21 points a game, which is not really the whole picture here, because they probably give up close to 400 yards a game. So I think you could strike with big plays on the Patriots, but once you get down into that red zone, they're difficult to score on. Plus, they do cause a lot of turnovers, which makes up for a lot of the yardage they give up. So they're a hard team to figure out, but once again, I just don't see You know, you go up there, you get a 15-degree day, maybe some snow, maybe some rain, and you're going to depend on a defensive to step up big. I just don't see him doing it. Maybe I'm going to be wrong. I just don't see it.
Yeah, that's kind of bad when you would aspire to be seen as a bend but don't break defense, but you're still giving up 3 touchdowns a game. I mean, that's not a very high water mark of excellence for any team there. It's interesting when we talk about the top teams in the NFC. You mentioned New Orleans possibly making the Super Bowl. I like most of the rest of the world still saying Green Bay, and yet I'm intrigued by you talking about New Orleans because I've said if anybody could do it, it would be New Orleans. They came up just shy the opening night of the season. It seemed like, again, they're not going to get a better shot at them than that, and they still came up short because New Orleans, again, they're not massively hobbled by being outside the dome, but they're not a great cold-weather team either, as witnessed by last year's unfortunate letdown in the wild card round. So talk about that, please. New Orleans and Green Bay, how you see them matching up, and if you agree with me that it pretty much comes down to those two in the NFC.
Yeah, I do agree with you. It's going to be those two firing and upset. I think the offense is kind of wash, and I'm going to give the Saints the edge because they're a better defensive club. I mean, the Packers, you could put points on. Look what happened with the Giants. You know, they put up 34 points on the Packers. You could score on them. You know, the Chiefs just upset them. So I think they could be had, and I think the Saints have the weapons that can match point for point with the Packers. And I'm a defensive guy, and I'm always going to go with the better defensive team. And I think the Saints can pull off the upset and beat the Packers in Green Bay.
That is very interesting. And again, yeah, I mean the Saints, neither one of those two teams, great defensively. The Saints are, I guess you would say, more towards mediocrity. The Packers more towards the lower end of the spectrum. We saw it on Sunday how reliant they are on turnovers and what happens when they don't get turnovers. It seems to be an odd kind of a thing. Really, it mirrors New England, and I guess it's not a surprise I would be picking Green Bay. Well, first of all, because everybody else is, it's a pretty strong consensus. Second of all, the fact I've been picking New England out of the AFC, I guess my point of view has been with offenses that are that overwhelming that nobody's going to be able to shut them down. But it's really, really a strange kind of a thing in the league, isn't it, Ira? I suppose they're probably not the only other, not the only two teams. They're the first two that come to mind. But as teams just are accelerating towards being almost unstoppable offensively, the thing that's keeping them from being unstoppable overall is a regression in the defense, and it's really odd that we've seen that out of Green Bay this year.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you. But, you know, just that in general with the league, the way the game is transformed, I'm old school, and I would much rather see a 17-13, 14-10 ball game than a 34-31 game any day of the week. But unfortunately today, I guess the younger generation – with fantasy sports and, you know, all these fantasy leagues, they want that scoreboard lighten up. And the NFL is turning into the NBA. You know, someday you may have 48, 45 games on a regular basis.
Yeah, that's the move towards offense really is one that is being accelerated an awful lot here. And again, it is definitely being geared towards the attention spans of today's youth. And I think there's very little question about that. As far as any in our remaining handful of minutes here, anything that looks to be looming beyond the end of the regular season, certainly the coaching carousel, that's already gotten underway with the firings in Kansas City, Miami, that we saw last week. Being there, being based out of New York, what are you hearing about Tom Coughlin and specifically how things look to go? I mean, this week could be very instrumental in that regard. If he is hanging by a thread, then this is going to be a must-win game this week here. Is Tom Coughlin really somebody who's hanging in the balance here as the Giants are coming down the stretch, especially after last week's shameful performance?
Oh, absolutely. If the Giants don't get in the playoffs, I would be stunned if he's back. They would definitely, because once again, it'll be a late-season swoon. And they would have to make a change. And, you know, Cowher's name has been floating around here for a couple of years. I'm not completely sold it would be Cowher. But, you know, I would say a big-name coach would come in here, maybe it's a guy like Gruden. I'm not quite sure who else is really floating around. I know Brian Billick's been tied to the Dolphins. Schottenheimer's been tied to the Dolphins. I don't know. You know, I guess Cowell really makes the most sense. Maybe he'll shock everybody and decide to come back to coaching. And probably that's the guy, if I own the Giants, that's the guy I'd want to bring in, because they really need to. Coughlin's, I think he's an excellent head coach. But, you know, just like an Andy Reid, you know, sometimes, and Jeff Fisher, you know, your program's only going to sell for so many years. And while you still may be on top of your game, sometimes a change is necessary. And I think that's where the Giants are at.
Yeah, he does seem to be kind of a guy that could get tuned out over a period of time. The thing that's interesting is they were talking about that. There was a lot of talk in the media the year they won the Super Bowl that he'd kind of eased off the throttle a little bit because he'd been on the verge supposedly of a player revolt the previous 12 months. He kind of eased off it then, but the last couple of years, yeah, maybe it's just gotten to the fact that you can only be tuned into somebody for so long. I guess I'll bring it full circle on that back to Rex Ryan, where we kind of started this. Again, it looks to be a run for the Jets in the playoffs again this year. I pretty much steadfastly refuse to take Cincinnati seriously the whole year, and I'm going to stick to that. So I see you guys making it and possibly at least getting through a round or two. I would like your odds against Houston, certainly, with some of the difficulties that they've got. But as things set with Rex Ryan, obviously no imminent job danger, nothing of that sort. But how is his act wearing over time? How do you forecast that holding up?
Well, I think, once again, it's going to be a quick exit, because you could only take that approach. You know, it's going to go through deaf ears eventually, and I think a lot of the fans are turned off by it right now. It's not my style. I bought into it. It was very refreshing after Mangini. But, you know, sooner or later, you can't keep on promising Super Bowls and not delivering. Now, you know, myself as a fan, you know, after two AFC title games, back-to-back years, if they don't get back to the AFC title game, I give them an F. I don't care. I don't care whether they beat the Texans and lose a tight game up in New England. If they don't get back to the AFC title, at least get back to the AFC title game. The season is a failure to me. And at that point, I think you'll see some changes, probably with some coaches, and I think you'll see a pretty good roster change with the New York Jets. And I just want to get to, if you got a couple more minutes,
yeah.
I just want to get to Andy Reid. You know,
yeah.
I was down in Philly for the game this weekend, and it was so interesting to hear the sports talk shows down there and to read the press down there. They didn't give the Eagles a shot. They thought the Jets were going to come in there and steamroll the Eagles, and, you know, just the opposite happened. And you know what? Once again, just like Coughlin, Andy Reid, you know, he's a top-notch coach, but I think he's been there about a dozen years, and it just may be time for a change.
Yeah, it may very well be. That's a great observation, Ira, and I would agree with that, and I think a lot of Philly fans would agree with that at the moment. But, as I've said previously on the show, and as I've been privileged to get to say to you in person at Cleveland Stadium, it's always fun to talk football with you, Ira. Great to get to do it here again tonight. Really appreciate it. All the best this holiday season to you and your family. I look forward to doing it again soon, my friend. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick, and once again, happy and healthy New Year.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Ira. All right, our good friend, Ira Lieberfarb, FDH Lounge NFL analyst. We're glad to have him on the program with us here tonight. We've got a great string of FDH Lounge mini episodes coming your way over the course of the next week here through the Christmas season and into the new year. So Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Holidays to everyone out there. This has been FDH Lounge mini episode 56.